What's up, you beautiful bastards? Hope you're having a fantastic Friday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show. And if you're new here, on Fridays, I do things a little bit different. On Fridays, I try to cover viewer-requested stories from the week, small and large, sometimes for better and also worse. And so with that said, we're going to start off with some viewer-requested industry news. This week, we saw YouTube Rewind back in the news. Of course, the infamously most disliked video here on YouTube. And that was because we had Susan Wojcicki, the CEO of YouTube, putting out a blog on the YouTube Creators Blog. And in this piece where she talks about things that we've also talked about on the show, like Article 13, also looking back at monetization in the past, moving forward. And then she also acknowledged the glaring disconnect that was YouTube Rewind from a lot of the YouTube community, writing, "But one record we definitely didn't set out to break was the most disliked video on the internet. Even at home, my kids told me our 2018 Rewind was, quote, cringy. We hear you that it didn't accurately show the year's key moments, nor did it reflect the YouTube you know. We'll do better to tell our story in 2019. So it's good to see from a higher up that they're aware of this disconnect. And it'll be interesting to see how they pivot. You know, are they talking superficial changes, or do they embrace the massive things on this platform and some of the massive creators on this platform that will ultimately make YouTube as a company a target? Then in news that showcases the ever-evolving landscape as far as online entertainment is concerned, we had Danielle Bergoli, aka the Catch Me Outside girl, aka Bad Baby. She, or rather the short-form docuseries with and about her that was released on Snapchat, it was a Snapchat original, according to reports, in the first 24 hours, it brought in 10 million unique viewers, which are some really insane numbers. I didn't realize so many people were even still using Snapchat, let alone that a series on it could bring in that many eyes. And then in another industry quickie, people want me to talk about the backlash that Shane Dawson has received because he had to delay his series. If you don't know, and you might be one of the only ones, I mean, the series, I think it's about to pass like 30 million views. Highly anticipated. It was incredibly well received. He has another one coming out soon. It was actually supposed to be out this last Wednesday, but Shane posted a tweet saying, "So me and Andrew had a random burst of inspiration last night and we want to add some stuff to part two. I don't want to rush it, so part two is going to go up Monday the 11th. It's going to be another movie length video, so it's pretty time consuming to edit, haha, but I'm excited." There was enough backlash or enough angry fans that he then later had to add, "Just a reminder that both parts are an hour and 45 minutes each, made by two guys, uploaded for free, and I probably won't post for another couple months, so I'm more than happy to take extra time to make it great. The amount of rude tweets I'm getting is insane." And as far as my reaction, I mean, I'm not surprised by this reaction. Obviously, you have a lot of people that are excited, they're frustrated that they're not gonna be able to get the thing that they want now. Right, I've never heard people say, you know, human beings in general, I find to be very patient. I'm not, I get it. I do think that it's kind of a D-bag move to then go shame or kind of harass the person that you apparently like just because they thought they could do something by a certain time, but then they realized if they want to put out a product that is at a certain level, they're going to have to delay. And to the people that would spew that negativity, not even to a Shane Dawson, just to anyone you otherwise support out there, don't. It doesn't help. It's not constructive. It just adds to stress. I mean, 2018, so many people have called it the year of the YouTuber burnout. And like he even said, he's making a free piece of content. There's only two of them, to which some people would be like, well, you could get more people. Well, as of now, that doesn't appear to be part of his business plan. And his business plan has seemingly worked out very, very well right now. So there's that. And then the last bit of industry news is actually, it's odd because I'm essentially reporting on myself. On the show, I've, of course, in the past talked about other creators in the space taking different kinds of swings, right? Trying to diversify, do something a little bit special. Right? We always try and highlight it because it's all about diversify. That is how you survive and thrive. And with that said, I'm extremely excited to announce that on Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern over at beautifulbastard.com, Beautiful Bastard, my men's care line, will officially be launched. At launch, it will specifically be focused on hair care. We have just amazing natural pomades that range from light to a heavy hold. I personally use heavy. Also, along with those, my other go-to is the Fantastic Clay Matte Pomade. That's kind of when you want the control, but you don't want the shine. You want to add some texture. That one's actually probably my favorite. Also, for you beautiful bastards who are not follically challenged like myself, you got that beard going? Well, we have Stellar Beard Oil for you so you can feel good, look good. The guys in the office that have tried it just cannot stop raving about it. And finally, because everything just smells so damn good, we took two of the scents that we use among the lines and we turned them into candles. And Carolina Pine is great, but my personal favorite is always bourbon and oak. And with all of that said, I do really want to hit on the note that this is not kind of some low quality, cheap, throw it at the wall, mass quantity grab. This is something that I wanted to make sure was truly fantastic. It was stellar. It's definitely aimed more at the mid to the higher end of the market. And that's because these products are made with high quality natural ingredients that are ethically sourced around the world and handmade here in the United States. And so with the nature of these kinds of products, that also means that we're going to be releasing it in somewhat of a limited fashion. So if you want to be one of the first people to get your hands on this, I would set your alarm to 4:55 p.m. Eastern Time on Monday. It might sell out in a week, it might sell out in a day. But also, if you want a chance to snag it at everyone's favorite price, free, to get a chance because we're gonna be randomly giving out some product, make sure you follow us on Twitter, make sure you follow us on Instagram. If you go to the site right now, you can go and sign up for the mailing list. But yeah, that's that. I'm excited to share this with you. And then let's talk about one of the weirdest stories that you guys sent us, and that is a story that involves a guy by the name of Rafael Samuel. And Rafael is a 27-year-old businessman from Mumbai, India, and he is suing his parents for giving birth to him without his consent. This is too stupid. This can't be real. How is this something that's not only been covered by, like, the Voxes of the world, but you have Fox News, The Guardian, the BBC? Okay, we're gonna trudge through this idiocy together. I know that I usually share my opinion at the end. This is too stupid. According to the BBC, Samuel understands that our consent can't be sought before we are born, but still insists it was not our decision to be born. And so his argument is that because we didn't ask to be born, we should be paid for the rest of our lives. This is too stupid. Now, you would think something this ridiculous and idiotic that this would cause tension inside the family, but according to Samuel, he actually gets along with his parents great, who, by the way, are lawyers. And according to reports, Raphael's mother actually admires her son, and in a statement posted to Facebook said, "I must admire my son's temerity to want to take his parents to court, knowing both of us are lawyers. And if Rafael could come up with a rational explanation as to how we could have sought his consent to be born, I will accept my fault." Okay, that just sounds like Rafael acting like his mother. And actually, wait, what the hell? The BBC wrote, in a statement, his mother explained a response to the recent upheaval my son has created. But diving deeper, it's actually a post from his account that just says, "I'm Rafael's mother." What? Also, when asked by local news how easy it would be to sue his parents, he answered, "Well, actually, I should know. It feels weird that I haven't noted this. I also don't know what the hell and why the hell that thing is on his face." But to the question, he said,
"Oh, it'll be very difficult. They have said, see, you may be our son, we love you and you love us, but we will tear you down in court."
But also, when looking into this stupid story, Samuel says that he figures his case won't actually even have a chance in court, saying, "I know it's going to be thrown out because no judge would hear it, but I do want to file a case because I want to make a point. And by point, I mean waste everyone's time." That last part I added. But my friends, with that said, we are already too deep into the stupid. The only way out is to go even deeper to get out on the other side. So what is this alleged point he's trying to make? Well, Samuel calls himself an antinatalist. And for those who don't know, antinatalism is the belief that having children is immoral and is actually harming the environment. And Samuel also thinks that the act of having children is selfish, that parents actually have children for their own personal pleasure. And actually about a year ago, he created a Facebook page called Nyla Nun. And this completely normal, nothing out of sorts page featured posters of him with the fake beard, sometimes wearing eye masks, presumably as a disguise, and having antinatalist messages on them, such as, "Oh wow, this is like Tumblr on Facebook. Why should I suffer? Why must I work? Why must I face wars? Your parents had you instead of a toy or a dog. You owe them nothing. You are their entertainment." And then, of course, my personal favorite ridiculousness: isn't forcing a child into this world and then forcing it to have a career kidnapping and slavery? No, it is not. Boom, someone could have saved him a lot of time if they just left that comment. But here's the thing, while looking into this, it does appear that antinatalism is becoming a movement in India. Because while Samuel may be trolling, and I want to believe that he is, because it's too much for me to handle, the thing with the beard too. Although, I mean, with how long he's been doing this is a very long troll. But I mean, he has been getting attention, albeit probably negative, make fun of you attention, but attention's attention. I've never heard a troll go, "Well, that was enough attention." However, the antinatalism movement in India does seem to be serious. In fact, there's an article in India Times this month that reported that the philosophy of antinatalism is gaining prominence in India. And they report that there's actually a group of Indians working to build a child-free society. And that article also mentions that Samuel is one of them. Another one of the groups is VHEMT, which stands for the Voluntary Human Extinction Movement. Okay, and so we have to end this madness. Here's my final take. One, the idea that having children is immoral, no. Do I agree that some people should not have children? Yes. You know, I've met people in my years who have had children because they thought it would make their relationship work, because they thought it would be fun, because, and they don't actively say it, but you can tell they're trying to get their kid to do the things that they never accomplished. But you know, I think it's good to push your kids to be successful, but it seems weird and manipulative from some people. But as far as people who have that thought and they're like, "I'm not gonna have kids," I think great. There's already so many people. And I imagine also if you live in India, you're like, there's so many fucking people. But at the same time, and this is probably me being too romantic on the idea, but I think having kids can actually be something somewhat hopeful. And if you raise this kid right, you do a good job, that there's hope for a better future, both for your child and the world, and positive change. And yeah, a lot of life is pain and suffering, but those things do make the good things in life that much sweeter. And there we go. I try to get a life lesson out of the most idiotic story I've ever been asked to cover. This is why we include time codes now. Then let's talk about what's happening in North Korea. In this week's State of the Union, Trump touched on the U.S.'s relationship with the country, and he has specifically credited his presidency with avoiding a disaster.
If I had not been elected president of the United States, we would right now, in my opinion, be in a major war with North Korea. Much work remains to be done, but my relationship with Kim Jong-un is a good one.
And really, that didn't come as a surprise. I mean, just last week, he made similar comments, boasting about his relationship with North Korea. Specifically, on January 31st, he talked about the missile situation.
There's no missile testing. There's no rocket testing. There's no nuclear testing.
And even that was repetition of something that he said back in September. And as far as things moving forward, Trump also announced during the State of the Union that he will be meeting Kim Jong-un in Vietnam on February 27th and 28th. This summit, of course, follows their first meeting in June, and nuclear weapons will likely be a main topic of conversation. And regarding this, Stephen Bagan, the State Department representative to North Korea, went to Pyongyang on Wednesday to confirm details about the upcoming summit. And in a speech last week at Stanford, Bagan said that the president expects progress to be made on nuclear efforts during their meeting.
President Trump has made clear, both to North Korea as well as to our team, that he expects significant and verifiable progress on denuclearization, actions that are bold and real to emerge from that next summit. We expect to hold working level negotiations with our North Korean counterparts in advance of the summit, with the intention of achieving a set of concrete deliverables, a roadmap of negotiations, and declarations going forward, and a shared understanding of the desired outcomes of our joint efforts.
And as far as North Korea is concerned, when discussing the second summit with advisors, Kim Jong-un had this to say, according to a state-funded paper. We will believe in the positive way of thinking of President Trump. We'll wait with patience and in goodwill, and together with the U.S., advance step by step toward the goal to be reached by both the DPRK and the U.S. With all of that said, a big thing to point out is that in the past, North Korea has said that it will work towards denuclearization, but right now it's unclear as to what exactly that means to them. Reportedly, it seems to be they'll do it if the U.S. does as well, which is going to be a non-starter for the Americans. But, I mean, that is something that will be a major point of discussion during the summit at the end of the month. Now, despite the announcement and Trump's claims that relations with North Korea are improving, a recent confidential UN report contradicts these ideas. Instead, it says that North Korea is hiding and dispersing its nuclear and ballistic weapons, and adding that their hope is that by spreading out their facilities, they can protect their arsenal in the event of any potential airstrike. And keep in mind, the information from the report comes from a UN secret council. And according to the report, some of the locations they are hiding, building, and testing weapons include civilian areas like airports, which would help protect their weapons because countries like the United States are less likely to attack an area with a high concentration of civilians. The report also says that North Korea is resisting UN sanctions on petroleum and coal with increased illegal ship-to-ship transfers of those products. In fact, regarding specifics, they cited one forbidden transaction of petroleum alone that was worth $5.7 million, and it also said that the country is illegally selling weapons to other countries like Yemen, Sudan, and Libya. And keep in mind, this is not just like a surprise thing out of nowhere. This is just the most recent report. Since the last summit, reports have come out consistently stating this despite what the president claimed. For example, 1 month after the summit, U.S. spy agencies, North Korea is working on new missiles. North Korea has not stopped nuclear missile program, according to confidential UN report. And we could post story on top of story that keeps coming out once a month, twice a month. But for the sake of time, we'll just share two more. North Korea is still working on its ballistic missile program, say U.S. officials. North Korea is expanding missile base with eye towards U.S., experts warn. And all of this goes to show us that there is an overwhelming reason to believe that North Korea is still working hard to protect its nuclear weapons, and the nuclear threat is still there. And so this leaves us with another situation where you have the President of the United States saying one thing, and then you also have international and domestic organizations and experts saying something else. And so we have this question of, well, why? Is it a negotiating tactic? Do people have the wrong information? If so, who and what is it? Or is it something as simple as not wanting to admit that something wasn't as big of a success as you had hoped it was? But also understand, I say that hoping that we are in a safer place, that we are in a safer world, right? Wanting this, since these are the steps that are being taken, wanting this to be a success. But of course, like always, I want to pass the question off to you. What are your thoughts on this? And then let's talk about this situation with Jeff Bezos in the news. And Jeff Bezos, of course, is the richest man in the world. He founded Amazon, he owns the Washington Post, but he's been in the news recently because he's getting divorced. There was a lot of talk about him cheating on his wife. We also saw the National Enquirer her posting text messages between Bezos and Lauren Sanchez, the woman they say he was having an affair with. And specifically with that last part, there have been many theories out there. Right, you have some people saying this is kind of your standard thing. If it wasn't Jeff Bezos, it'd be another celebrity. This is kind of standard tabloid gossip stuff. But at the same time, given politics and certain relationships, there have been people saying that this might have just been a political hit job. And the reason people have said this is based off of the kind of relationship between three individuals: Jeff Bezos, President Trump, and David Pecker, who owns AMI, which owns the National Enquirer. Right. You had people saying that Donald Trump is not a fan of the coverage he's gotten from the Washington Post. He doesn't like Jeff Bezos. Meanwhile, Donald Trump reportedly has had a long-time relationship with David Pecker. Right? AMI is the same company that back in 2016 bought former Playboy model Karen McDougal's account of her alleged affair with Trump for $150,000. Right? Pulling off what they called a catch and kill so that story didn't get out. Right? So was this a political hit job? Was essentially the National Enquirer being used as a tool, as a weapon to take down a perceived enemy of the president? Right? So those two beliefs have already been out there. And then we got a massive update yesterday. Jeff Bezos put out a Medium article titled, "No Thank You, Mr. Pecker," writing, "Something unusual happened to me yesterday. Actually, for me, it wasn't just unusual, it was a first. I was made an offer I couldn't refuse." Or at least, that's what the top people at the National Enquirer thought. I'm glad they thought that because it emboldened them to put it all in writing. Rather than capitulate to extortion and blackmail, I've decided to publish exactly what they sent me, despite the personal cost and embarrassment they threatened. And so Bezos gives that background of the catch and kill story, which he says was on behalf of President Trump and his election campaign. He goes on to say, "Mr. Pecker and his company have also been investigated for various actions they've taken on behalf of the Saudi government," including a quote from a New York Times article reading, "After Mr. Trump became president, he rewarded Mr. Pecker's loyalty with a White House dinner to which the media executive brought a guest with important ties to the royals in Saudi Arabia. At the time, Mr. Pecker was pursuing business there while also hunting for financing for acquisition." Bezos was also writing, "Federal investigators and legitimate media have of course suspected and proved that Mr. Pecker has used the Enquirer and AMI for political reasons." And from there, he explains his story, where these text messages were released by the National Enquirer, and saying, "I engaged investigators to learn how those texts were obtained and to determine the motives for the many unusual actions taken by the Enquirer." He mentions there are now several independent investigations looking into this matter, but regarding his, to lead his investigation, he retained Gavin DeBecker. He then goes on to say, "Several days ago, an AMI leader advised us that Mr. Pecker is apoplectic about our investigation." Adding, "For reasons still to be better understood, the Saudi angle seems to hit a particularly sensitive nerve. A few days after hearing about Mr. Pecker's apoplexy, we were approached verbally at first with an offer. They say they had more of my text messages and photos that they would publish if we didn't stop our investigation." He goes on to say, "My lawyers argued that AMI has no right to publish photos since any person holds the copyright to their own photos, and since the photos in themselves don't add anything newsworthy. Meanwhile, AMI's claim of newsworthiness is that the photos are necessary to show Amazon shareholders that my business judgment is terrible." And then he later adds, "I guess we, me, my lawyers, and Gavin DeBecker didn't react to the generalized threat with enough fear, so they sent this." And he provides what appears to be a copy-paste of an email, saying it's from Dylan Howard, chief content officer at AMI, allegedly writing, "In the interest of expediting this situation, and with the Washington Post poised to publish unsubstantiated rumors of the National Enquirer's initial report, I wanted to describe to you the photos obtained during our news gathering. In addition to the, quote, below-the-belt selfie, otherwise colloquially known as a dick pic, the Enquirer obtained a further 9 images. These include Mr. Bezos' face selfie at what appears to be a business meeting, Ms. Sanchez's response, a photograph of her smoking a cigar in what appears to be a simulated oral sex scene, a shirtless Mr. Bezos holding his phone in his left hand while wearing his wedding ring. He's wearing either tight black cargo pants or shorts, and his semi-erect manhood is penetrating the zipper of said garment. A full-length body selfie of Mr. Bezos wearing just a pair of tight black boxer briefs or trunks with his phone in his left hand while wearing his wedding ring. A selfie of Mr. Bezos fully clothed. A full-length scantily clad body shot with short trunks. A naked selfie in a bathroom while wearing his wedding ring. Mr. Bezos is wearing nothing but a white towel, and the top of his pubic region can be seen. Ms. Sanchez wearing a plunging red neckline dress revealing her cleavage and a glimpse of her nether region. Ms. Sanchez wearing a two-piece red bikini with gold detail dress revealing her cleavage. And closing, it would give no editor pleasure to send this email. I hope common sense can prevail. And quickly." Dylan. And the thing is, that isn't the only alleged email. Bezos goes on to say, "In the AMI letters I'm making public, you will see the precise details of their extortionate proposal. They will publish the personal photos unless Gavin DeBecker and I make the specific false public statement to the press that we, quote, have no knowledge or basis for suggesting that AMI's coverage was politically motivated or influenced by political forces." And he provides what appears to be an email from John Fine, Deputy General Counsel AMI, and it appears to be in somewhat more legal language, proposed term, full and complete mutual release of all claims, that statement that Bezos previously mentioned, American media won't publish, distribute, share, or describe unpublished texts and photos, the agreement's confidential, also, and this is a big one, in the case of a breach of the agreement by one or more of the Bezos parties, AM is released from its obligations under the agreement and may publish the unpublished materials. And it goes on to include another alleged email, but at this point, you get the point. This is some next level what the hell is happening 2019 news. You have the richest man in the world exposing himself in a Medium post about him taking photos of when he exposed himself as a way to shine a light on and expose, if these emails are real, the National Enquirer and American media extorting someone with a situation where allegedly there are numerous independent investigations trying to figure out why. Because yes, it could be normal for AM to send an email that said American media emphatically rejects any assertion that its reporting was instigated, dictated, or influenced in any manner by external forces, political or otherwise. But when you pair that with them trying to kill what appears to be the Saudi angle of this story, raises a lot of red flags. We're already beginning to see updates and new developments with this story. Ronan Farrow responded to this Medium post saying, I and at least one other prominent journalist involved in breaking stories about the National Enquirer's arrangement with Trump fielded similar, quote, stop digging or we'll ruin you blackmail efforts from AMI, and adding, I did not engage as I don't cut deals with subjects of ongoing reporting. And then in response to Farrow, we saw former Associated Press editor Ted Brightus tweet, we were warned explicitly by insiders that AMI had hired private investigators to dig into backgrounds of AP journalists looking into the tabloid's efforts on behalf of Trump. Never saw evidence of this either way, and it didn't stop our reporting. And in fact, today we got a response from American Media who wrote, American Media believes fervently that it acted lawfully in the reporting of the story of Mr. Bezos. Further, at the time of the recent allegations made by Mr. Bezos, it was in good faith negotiations to resolve all matters with him. Nonetheless, in light of the nature of the allegations published by Mr. Bezos, the board has convened and determined that it should promptly and thoroughly investigate the claims. Upon completion of that investigation, the board will take whatever appropriate action is necessary. And ultimately, that's where we are with the story right now. Understand, though, this is still a developing situation. It's going to be interesting to see how or if the president will respond to what Bezos put out there. But yeah, I know it's a lot, but of course, like with every story, I'd love to know your thoughts on this one in those comments down below. And that's where we're going to end today's show. And remember, if you liked this video, let us know. Hit that like button. Also, if you're new here, be sure to hit that subscribe button. I'd also recommend clicking that bell to turn on notifications. Also, on that note, if you missed and you want to catch up on the last Philip DeFranco show or the Extra Morning News deep dive, you can click or tap right there to watch those. But with that said, of course, as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you Monday. Huh, that was a long one.